Welcome back to Down to Brass Talks. I just received a message, which I believe was forwarded, and it says, Peter is past his sell-by date. He continues to destroy the station's image for impartiality. Certainly, we all wanted to be rid of the Barbados Labour Party, but he's turning out to be a carping little bleep. Down to Brass Talks, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Wickham. How are you this morning?
How you doing?
Okay. I hear good, man. I didn't know that you were so powerful not till just now when that guy from the Democratic Labour Party. But what I'm saying is, I bring our whole government. I feel he's still giddy because I don't think he realized that it's 74% of the electorate that would have spoken to the Democratic Labour Party. Mm-hmm. But they always say in the land where there's no vision, the people would perish. So I still think that he's in that land. One of the things that I would like to say to you this morning, I would like to congratulate the new Prime Minister for the way that she will start out on going after her business embargo in this country. But I would like to say, though, that to the, in the Ministry of Transport and Works, I would like somebody from a board, something, because you can't know what is going on in an area unless you get out in the streets, like Mayor Morty down and ride moose shoulders and things among the people. For the past weeks, people were hearing about the problems with buses going to college Savannah in St. John. And I understand there were people in there from as far as 1 o'clock after 11, somewhere there about yesterday, that was waiting to get a bus and they never got one, not till almost after 6 o'clock yesterday. I think that the time for that should come to an end, and somebody from the transport needs to go into the terminal, interact with those people from College Savannah and see what is really going on and check the office upstairs who is responsible for doing it, because it has been happening now with the people from that area for quite some time now. And I would like to see an end put to that, because it is wrong that anybody should go in the bus terminal and stand up 5 or 6 hours before they get a bus. And sometimes you see buses leave to go to certain areas with 8 or 9 people and so in them. So I think that that is something that needs looking into very urgent. At the same time, I would like to compliment the Minister of Culture, Mr. John King, for doing what he did to the Chihuahua, because the gentleman who was supposed to be all this pit bull, I compliment John and his team, because in St. Philip West, it was one of the platforms that any person could have enjoyed. And you were quite right when you said that they all were going vent their frustration with what was going on, and then they all will vote for the policies that implement their hurt and pain. So it wasn't only Fandev Stewart that was on trial. It was the Democratic Labour Party that was on trial, and the people have spoken. So therefore, all I am saying is now that they need to sit down and accept this. They paid for the wrongs that they did to the people, and those who don't believe that that it is you, Peter Wickham, and your critic. No, they did it to themselves. And I am sure that it won't happen now in this administration. This administration will try and do everything in its power to negotiate and speak to the people and upgrade and let them know what is going on in the country.
You know, the fascinating thing about your point, and Dennis made this reminded me of this when we were off air, that the Democratic Labour Party had a whole radio station and TV station at its disposal with a whole social media apparatus. So you had 20-something odd ministers, you have the power of a whole station, and yet still you are complaining about the fact that the media was stacked against you. They even had, by some suggestions, they had a whole newspaper at their disposal, and it was in the Nation. Probably even two. And they may have had one online as well. But against all of that, you were still able to lose. And that to me is what, you know, I do feel that we need to have a seriousness where we discuss the reasons for the loss and we try to understand the context within which it is saying. I mean, I take your point about the victory of John King. One of the things that I always do in the wake of an election is I do an analysis, a swing analysis, to try to see which of the candidates won on their own steam or which of them were carried by the political party. And I need to conduct that. I have not yet done so. So it would be at that point that I could understand whether people like John King, Dr. Brown, Kirk Humphrey, and also the person who defeated Chris Sinclair, you know, whether these people actually won or whether the party won. And I am inclined to think there's a combination of both, but the swing analysis will help us to understand the individual contributions and the extent to which, you know, we have some heroes in the midst. All right,
yes,
sir?
Peter.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Good. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Yes, a very good morning to you, Peter.
How are you doing?
Yes, I'm speaking as a taxpayer and also express my right as on the Constitution's freedom of expression. First, I want to say that in the court of public opinion, the electorate has spoken and they have delivered their verdict, Turkey Love, and that is the end of that. Now, what I want to say is that the Amapara School, on a positive note, needs to be reopened for those special needs students. I think it was closed prematurely and ill-advised. Two, I would like to see forensic audits done of all the ministries to make sure the money is there where it should be and can be accounted for. And also, I ain't saying that. That's your thing. It's a forensic audit.
Normally, a forensic audit is to ensure that money ain't get teeth. Or if it get teeth, to find out where it went.
Semantics is a bit of a comfortable far.
So, I'm a part of school, forensic audits.
And also that the files, now the files are a very serious thing. And they also need to do audit of files in the ministry as well because
there are
rumors that files going missing. So they need to do a forensic audit for money, separate and distinct from also audit
for files.
Yes, they must get those files and they must be accountable for. The Crown's property and people must be held accountable for the Crown's money and the Crown's property, be it files. Okay. So with that, I will thank you very much.
Don't go yet because I want to respond to you and say a couple of things. With regard to the forensic audit, sir, I think that you might not be aware how expensive forensic audits are. The forensic audit into the O'Halloran affair in Trinidad and Tobago was legendary in terms of its cost. It was also legendary in terms of the quantity of money that they were able to find, because as I understand it, most of what they were able to find, they got back through what we call ex gratia payments by the time O'Halloran was already dead. I don't really know that was beneficial. There were forensic audits into the Antigua Labour Party administration in 2004 that were conducted by the Bob and Spencer administration. After the election that followed 2004, which would have been 2007, I believe, speed subject to corruption, Bob and Spencer told me himself that he found the cost of the forensic audit had become discouraging, and he was not convinced that the cost was leading them in the direction of any abundance of money that they could put their hands and get back home. So it was difficult to sustain. Hold on a second. And he moved towards a commission of inquiry because he found that was going that way. What I said just now, and what I would reiterate, is that there's a reason why we have a New Testament. The Barbados Democratic Labour Party did many bad things, and they have been punished electorally. I would hope right now that a priority of the Barbados Labour Party administration is rebuilding this economy and not pursuing that type of action, because I am concerned about the cost of forensic audits, and I'm also concerned about the history of them and the fact that over history, they haven't really seemed to get back anything. The last one they did in Antigua, they raised a few million dollars. But unfortunately,
can I just make a brief point here?
Right, but no, I just want to respond to the two points that you made. So the first thing you talked about was what you were talking about, Amapara School, right?
Yeah.
When Amapara School closed down, I remember making a point that I thought that was probably one of the better things that the Democratic Labour Party did while they were in office, and credit to Minister Jones for having done so. I do not think that Alma Paris has a place in our educational system at this time, sir. And I say that simply because there's nothing that you do at Alma Paris that you can't do at Queen's College. There's nothing you do at Alma Parsi. You can't do at Harsons. You can't do at Alexandra's or Foundation School. I think that the students who went to Alma Parsi should be distributed across the educational institutions that we currently have, where special facilities are provided in ordinary schools that help people who have these kinds of challenges. And my feeling is the idea of putting all the students in one school, putting them in a uniform and identifying with them would always have been problematic as we develop. So, sir, I can't agree with you. I do hope that Alma Parsi remains closed, but I do hope that the students from Alma Parsi are embraced at other educational institutions across the board. And those are the two points you made, right?
Okay, so I
give you the opportunity to respond, and then we go.
Yeah. I want to say, in terms of the Alma Parsi School, it's special needs. And special needs means children that suffer severe dyslexia.
I know what they are, sir.
That is a reading barrier. Yeah. And then you have people with dysmeric, have problems with numbers.
Sir, I'm dyslexic. I know what you're talking about.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is that before I draw logical conclusions, throw children like that into mainstream school, they can become frustrated and
that's
lost.
Not true.
I leave that
sir,
there.
Sir, there is no evidence to suggest that that is the case. Sir, if you go to places like France, right, you will find all schools have the capacity to deal with extreme special needs, with moderate special needs, and with children who are specially gifted. You can do all of that.
If you have a school
of over 1,000 students, there's absolutely no reason why you cannot have classrooms that facilitate all of those. Even students who have severe physical disabilities, they're at the stage now where they do not put them in special schools because of the stigma associated with it.
And the belief that if you put
rubber, then that's what you do. So the resources you use at Alma Parsi, spread them across the educational institution, and a child that is dyslexic like myself can go to school with ordinary children and rub shoulders, and then everybody will realize that is no big deal.
And the buildings for Alma Parsi can be an extension for Alexandra School, who has a sick form. Don't just let them stay there and become a sick building.
Well,
it's
whatever.
Right next to the police station.
Whatever.
Maybe it can become
a police station.
That should be an annex for the sixth form.
So that's a separate matter.
And my final point is that the Olajan report, and the Olajan report was speaking volumes year after year after year. You don't have to go to France. All the Olajan has auditors, and the Olajan was crying out and alerting things but contracts.
You can use that as a basis to lock up somebody.
I don't lock up the body. That's not my thing. I'm seeing that Olajan report. And that is the basis of it. You go spend a large sum, you already have the auditor's office, and they can dispatch auditors. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go and bring in a forensic audit. You can already start with putting auditors.
No, but the key with the forensic audit, sir, is that the forensic audit helps you to find out where the money went, as opposed to auditor that would just tell you the money in there. So the forensic part is where, you know, you're going to see a trace, the root of that money, and you try to find out where the money gone in the hope that you could get it back. The problem is that forensic auditors don't come cheap. So that's just something to think about. All right, sir, down to Brass Talks. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Down to Brass Talks. Good morning. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air. Remember, we run until midday. At that point, we take a break for the regional roundup. Then we come back to you, and then we go at 12:30 for the latest. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Hi, how are you doing, sir?
Fine. And you?
I'm great.
Good. Yeah. First, let me congratulate Prime Minister Motley and her cabinet. I wish them well in the future. I miss the various myriad of things they have to do to make sure that Barbados gets back on even keel and being pulled back from the precipice. The other thing is that prior proper planning prevents poor performance. And there was no prior proper planning in the Democratic Labour Party, so what would I expect? And I noticed that you have now become a mafia in terms of rigging elections with your voice. Oh, Lord, man, you've gone high up in my estimation. I'm further ahead in my estimation.
Powers I didn't know I had.
Powers I didn't know you had. The other thing is that the rubbing shoulders of things that started about 3 years ago. The other one is when I can remember you at the School of Government. I can remember that you made a presentation there when you were having these outreaches.
Oh, Springer Memorial. This is the privatization forum.
Right.
Yeah.
Things were very important.
First time in my life I saw on a platform at Owen Arthur.
Yes, I remember that very well. Yeah. And what has happened is that there was a proper planning from early o'clock in terms of the outreach programs and this rubbing shoulders and things like that. Mm-hmm. So people again, the Barbados Labour Party, the planning of the Barbados Labour Party was exemplary. I think it's one of the best planned elections and executions that has been done in the Barbados Labour Party for years, or probably even in Barbados. The other thing is that one has now got to look at, you spoke about the Barrow's legacy, and let me say independence was a high, the priority points of his legacy, and then free education at the tertiary level. Mm-hmm. What is significant now is, I don't know how you look at this, is with Mayor Motley administration promising now to give back free education at the tertiary level, the millenniums now coming up, whenever that happens, if ever it happens, the legacy will be Mayor Motley's legacy, mm-hmm. as far as the millenniums are concerned. Mm-hmm. Because I know when I was going to school, you hear, bar free education, bar, so therefore I voted for the Democratic Labour Party. The opposite, it might be true on this particular election. The election's coming up. Mm-hmm. Where the millenniums now will say, the legacy is Mayor Motley's legacy to give him back free education, therefore I'm going with the Barbados Labour Party. That's something I got to watch.
It's an interesting point where a new party steals, well, an old party in the case of the BLP,
yes?
steals the ground upon which you stand. And that's
right.
something about which the Dems ought to be very concerned.
About, yes, I think so. The other thing I found too is that if they were serious, first of all, I see they use the Obama's wife's theory when they go low.
Here we go high.
Go high. And that was all true. Cease and settle. Cease and settle. Remember those words?
Mm-hmm.
Cease and settle. I'll tell you, talk about somebody from the Democratic Labour Party. Mayor was punks on him and says, cease and settle. We don't want to go down that road. And I think that was very, very good. I think that the outburst from up at the stadium, from Mr. the Minister of, I don't know how to call him body name, I can say the Minister of Social Affairs. I think that was atrocious. Mm-hmm. And it was supported ably by a man who I think should resign from the Democratic Party as well, the chairman, whoever he was at that time. Yeah, I think you know that very well.
You're thinking about, who was the chairman of that meeting?
I mean, it was none other than Bobby Morris.
Bobby Morris, okay.
Yes. And the statement made by McLean on last week, Friday, on David Ellis's program, is instructive. Mm. Instructive from a political point of view. And you can't come and give you, let people vote in the daytime, and then you bring your manifesto in the nighttime. That is stupidness. Mm. And the other one, the final one I can share with you, I got a lot more I can talk about, but the final one I can share with you is this one where you keep back the election for nearly 3 months, but yet you are not man enough to come out and say in your own voice when the date is called, you got to go through GIS. Nonsense. Mm-hmm. And you expect people to go along. And in fact, my theory did work out, and I had forecast no seats. Mm-hmm. So therefore, I didn't have a problem with that. But those are things you got to look at. Mm-hmm. If they want to get back, as you are saying, they must find the young people out there who will go in and build back their party. As Stricker said, as you're saying, that he would not upset the two seats in the Senate if it comes about.
Mm-hmm. But he supports Bobby Morris's argument.
Two young, strong people in your party, mm-hmm. don't put other young people at all, and send them to the Senate. Let us start blooding them for taking over the party and running with it. Mm-hmm. So have a great blessed day, man.
All right, thanks a lot for calling, sir. Have a two quick WhatsApp messages I want to receive. Peter, I'm glad to have you back. I'm in Georgetown now, and CARICOM Nationals here are still celebrating. All of a sudden, I think we are being looked up to again in Barbados. I read in the media that all the pollsters got it wrong because no one predicted a Queen's sleep, and the swing was predicted at only about 3%. And I'll tell you what happens when you don't release your polls, because I think the media here got that wrong. Of course, I'd be happy to correct that perception when given the opportunity to do so, but we have to wait until Mr. Straker's tenantry comes on the program. Peter, keep up the good work. By the way, has anyone seen or heard of either Ms. Holder or the Trinidadian lady, her Trinidadian sidekick, lately? And the answer to that, of course, is no, I haven't heard about them. Peter, I understand what you said about forensic audits, and they are expensive. But FAA can pay for themselves. Forensic audits can pay for themselves by giving the auditors a percentage of what they found, say 30 cents on every dollar. That is an interesting one, because I wasn't aware that forensic auditors operated in that way. My challenge with the forensic audits with which I'm familiar, which is the one into the medical benefit scheme in Antigua, and then the O'Halloran issue, was that finding the money is one thing, but actually getting it back physically seems to be legally challenging. And the problem in Antigua was that the forensic auditor's report was followed by an extremely expensive court case where they had to put the plaintiff in, the defendant, sorry, in court in Miami. And the government found it was an expensive undertaking to chase these people in courts that were not their own courts. And therein lies the problem. So, down to brass tacks, good afternoon.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, sorry. Yes, right. Yeah.
All right. I want to agree with some of your last callers said just now. Yeah. I honestly believe that the battle at Waterford also played a major part in this campaign.
Of course.
They voted down the center. That meeting swayed them a lot. Mm-hmm. But somebody want to discuss with you some stats. How many people voted in 2013?
I don't remember the numbers. But I know what you're getting at, and I'm happy to have that conversation.
I have some numbers here, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
78,000 plus voted for the Democratic Labor Party in 2013.
Right.
74,000 plus voted for the BLP in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's over 152,000, right?
Yeah, you made the point. You made the point.
How many voted this 2018? You have the stats there?
The 2018? Sorry, I'm not sure of the numbers.
All right, I have
a. But if you have it, just read it. Just read it.
All right, I have 151,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in actual fact, just about 1,000 people did not vote compared to 2013, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now the BLP increased their vote from 74,000 to 110,000.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Labor Party's vote decreased from 78,000 to 33,000.
Right.
So they lost almost 45,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said earlier that the DLP, you said sometime back that the DLP supporters did not come out and vote. I beg to differ. I somehow believe that DLP supporters did come out and vote, and mm-hmm. they voted for the Barbados Labor Party.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you tally up the amount of votes, right, Peter? With the independents and the other parties, it was 33,000 for the DLP and another 8,000 for the independents and solutions and the rest, right? That is 41,000.
Okay.
So out of that 45,000 that did not vote for the Democratic Labor Party this time around, right?
Mm-hmm.
41,000 voted. So I'm guaranteeing you that a lot of DLP voters did vote, and they did vote for the Barbados Labor Party. What do you think?
I was actually just trying to find the document which I prepared that was in the newspaper on Sunday. Because this is a question that came up. Actually, my former associate called me yesterday making a similar point based on looking at the numbers and saying that was something that needed to be discussed. The first thing, the first rule of thumb in my business is that I tend, and we tend at Cadres, not to rely too heavily on numbers. We look at percentages. And the reason for that is very simple. In every single election, the numbers will be different. Even if you look at the registration numbers in the St. Peter by election, where there was an election held within a few weeks, ultimately, it was always a different number of people registered because somebody can die, somebody can be eligible that weren't eligible before. So in order to make reasonable comparisons, you have to use numbers, right? Sorry, you need to use percentages. The other point that I want to make, sir, is that I do not think it is reasonable to say that the Democratic Labor Party is in the position it was because the Democratic Labor Party supporters stayed home. Or the Democratic Labor Party is in the position it was because the Dems went home and voted for the Bs. In every single scenario, politically, there will always be a combination. So part of the reason that the DLP is in the situation it is in because of voter conversion, in that there were Bs who voted for the Ds. And another part of the reason is that because there were people who have potentially voted for the DLP that stayed home. So in response to your question, sir, in the simplest way I can say, it is clearly a combination of two factors that caused this toxic mix that resulted in the defeat of the Democratic Labor Party in the way that they were defeated. There was a 25% swing, right, in terms of Democratic Labor Party support. So it means that 25% more points, more people voted for the DLP this time around. There was, I think it was a 29% swing away from the Democratic Labour Party, which also is in a sense historic because you had a depreciation in terms of their support that was significant. And you had two factors. One, the ones that voted for the Democratic Labour Party and the ones that voted for the third parties. But then there was the stay-home factor. And while I think, sir, that it is reasonable, when you look at the change in terms of the number of people from 62% in 2013 to 60%, it's only 2 percentage points different.
Only two?
Right. So then 2 percentage points could have contributed to that scenario. But clearly there was an overwhelming voter conversion also. Either conversion to the Barbados Labour Party or alternatively conversion to the UPP. To the third parties. And in my opinion, the conversion to the third parties is essentially a rejection of the Democratic Labour Party as well, because that's where the conversation was going.
But Peter, a conversion to the third party was only
2%.
Somebody started
4%. 4%. 4%. It's
4%. Right. 4%. Right. You said 4%.
So you have 25, and you're saying that if you have 25, and you're trying to understand where that 25 came from, you're seeing 2 from the stop home factor, and 4 from the third party factor. So that is only 7. So you're saying that the bulk of it is voter conversion. That's what you're saying.
I don't know if it's the bulk of it is voter conversion. I believe the bulk of it is just people were just fed up, to be very honest.
But then, voter conversion.
Even with their own party. Mm-hmm. Because I could honestly say to you, I listened to a lot of DLP supporters. Not only that they were saying that they're not going to vote, but a lot of them simply said that the party has embarrassed them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them told me that. They were embarrassed.
But sir, in broadly statistical terms, and that's how I'm looking at it, in broadly statistical terms, we call that voter conversion. A person who was a Dem that voted for the BLP for whatever reason. But I'm just saying, if you look at the stats of it, and I finally found the document. Sorry, it took so long. And so you're saying that you're trying to account for this 25% swing, right? And
Correct. You're
saying if the decrease in terms of the number of people participating from 62 to 60, because 62 in 2013, you're looking at 60%. Sorry, you're looking at 60% now. Then clearly 2% would have come from the stop home factor, as we call it. And then the other four is the other party support, because the DLP support is at 22%.
But to lose 45,000 people...
But it's not 45,000 people saying that you're losing 25% of your support.
Well, you call it percentage. I still looking at numbers.
You realize the challenge with the numbers.
But personally, I don't, because...
No, the challenge with the numbers, sir, presumes that the same number of people that were eligible last time are the same number of people eligible this time, and that's not the case.
Correct.
So the idea of saying that Prime Minister Motley's margin was bigger than someone else's or smaller than someone else presumes that they have the same number of people that can vote for them, and that's not the case in all constituencies.
You know, one that from 2013, that when I looked at the numbers, you remember in 2013, Mark Thompson, even with that 78 to 74,000 margin, mm-hmm. the last election, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, right? That when you looked at St. John, 2013, St. John alone had accounted for at least St. John's last election was over about 3,200 or something. Mara Thompson got to Hudson Griffith, just over 1,000. So when you had looked at that one parish alone of St. John, it even tells you that the last, which that was expected, St. John, it even tells you that 2013 election was even a lot closer than the 16-14 vote it was. Because St. John took up majority of those those numbers alone.
But I'm looking at the document here now. The St. John margin was almost 3,000 votes.
Correct.
The St. Philip North was 2,000. And then between St. Michael South, Northwest, and St. Philip West, each of them were around 1,000 votes. So the point you're making is that if you say, let's say 3 and 2, 5 and 3, that's what? 5 and 3 is 8?
8.
Right.
Yeah.
8,000 votes in 4 constituencies, and all of the rest of them is a pack of cigarettes.
Correct.
In the scheme of things. So, sir, that leads me to this point that I was trying to make with some difficulty previously. This was an election in which, if it was a big swing election, what happened was entirely predictable. If it was a small swing election, you could have managed that. And that's the reason why I come back to this point, that this was 1971 and 1981. Because exactly what happened in 1971 and 1981 is what happened in 2013. And in 2013, if you look at it, it's the same thing. You have these three or four seats that have thousands of votes that leads to this perception that there's a high level of support resonating with the person that is the victor. When in truth and in fact, that's not the case, because as you correctly said, it is in a small, is in a small cluster.
Correct. But Peter and Dennis, I want to say, I've been getting some lashes from my wife to stay off the People's Radio Station.
But why?
I want to say thank you all to VOB for letting me express my views for the last 3-4 years.
Man, and no, but don't stop.
Enjoyable.
Don't stop.
It was an enjoyable time. And I want to say thank you, guys. I have done my civic duty, and I appreciate the time I was given on this air. I have done my civic duty. And thanks to you, David Eswick. Sorry.
David Ellis.
Corey Collymore, Tiger Price, all the rest. And I hope one day to see another moderator in your guys' chair, and I hope she's able to take the lashes if she ever do come to this chair again.
Who is this?
The lady who was Maria? The lady who was in the plane. Thank you all. And I really appreciate being on this program today.
All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. We take a break and come right back.